Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, to find common ground and take it to the next level with David Clark here on Blog Talk Radio. Each week, the show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. We will have an exciting array of diverse guests who will point up the fact that we are all spiritual beings having a human experience. Now your host, David Clark.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, where we will indeed be finding common ground and taking it to the max level. I'm your host, David Clark. I'm a spiritual adventurer, and I suggest you become the same. When you keep an open mind, you will come to see where we can find common ground so that you can relate rather than compare yourself to others. And you will also come to see that you will see that despite our seeming differences, we're all basically the same. So excuse my redundancy, and I have a special surprise for you tonight because our scheduled guest, Kelly Fluck, has not come into the studio. So I've asked a good friend by the name of Wayne Kunkel to come in and talk about 12-step recovery, which is so important in this day and age where people attach themselves to outer conditions like people, places, and things to make themselves feel better, when only spirit can fill that void of ache within that all of us feel because we're longing to find something greater than ourselves. And so many of us turn to things like alcohol, drugs, sex, gambling, workaholism, religious addiction, compulsive exercise, relationships, etc. I think that many of us will be able to relate to that situation, and my guest Wayne and I both have experienced multiple addictive situations. And so let me just tell you briefly about him, short and sweet. Wayne Kunkel is a businessman and a recovering person who will share talk about his recovery along with me from various addictions. He has developed lasting sobriety and will share his experience, strength, and hope for others who have walked a similar path. And so with that said, I'd like to introduce Wayne. Wayne, how are you tonight?
Good evening, David. I'm well. Thank you.
Great. Well, thank you for pitch hitting for me. This was a surprise, and you've always been somebody that I've been able to count on in my hour of need. Not that I'm desperate now, but you've certainly helped me through some major hurdles in the past, and for that I'm eternally grateful.
Well, and likewise, I'm just returning a favor, David, and so thank you, and it's a great symbiotic relationship that we have being in recovery.
Well, I think that's the case for most people in recovery, at least those that get it, wouldn't you say?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
I think that really you have to give back in order to get the program. If you're not giving back, then if you're just a taker, then you're not going to be successful in the program.
Right, and takers are what addicts are. They take for their own pleasure and come up on empty, wouldn't you say?
Yes, that's a good analogy. The it's something that's learned. Obviously, when someone walks into a 12-step room for the first time, if you're not frightened, scared, nervous, there's probably something wrong with you, because it is certainly something that can be, it is a new adventure, to put it another way, but it's also very nerve-wracking because you're in a room in a program that you have never experienced before, presumably.
Yeah.
And I remember my first night, I was very nervous about being in a room with strangers, and oh my God, they expect me to share something, and I think many people, right?
Well,
and I think, yeah, but many people don't share for a long time.
Well, I had a slightly different experience. You want to hear about it?
Absolutely.
Well, first of all, I must say that the first 12-step meeting I ever went to, and I'm breaking my anonymity here, even though David Clark is a pen name, and my professional name, my first 12-step program was Codependence Anonymous, otherwise called CODA. And I guess I did feel nervous there, but it was a stepping stone to Alcoholics Anonymous that I came into a few weeks later. And I think the woman that introduced me to CODA was giving me a nudge in another direction. And it wasn't until I was confronted by my then partner, a beautiful man named Al, that I had a real serious problem and that he wasn't going to put up with it nor stay with me unless I did something about it, that I woke up to the fact that at that point in time I was drinking alcoholically. And my last drunk, this is just a little bit more of the history preceding the meeting, which happened the next day. My last drunk started with a single beer. I'd stopped drinking cold turkey for 3 days. And I went into the refrigerator to warm up some leftovers, and there was a bottle of beer. And I thought, well, one beer is not going to hurt. Well, I drank that, didn't deal with the leftovers, noticed a quarter of a bottle of gin. And I thought, well, that won't do too much, but, you know, it might take the edge off. So I drank that. I had some gin and tonics or something. I don't know. I might have drank it straight up. Well, by then, I was starting to feel a little bit desperate. And I remembered that somebody had brought a bottle of tequila that had been sitting in the cupboard for years because I hated the stuff. And I thought, that might be tasty mixed with lemonade. So I drank all of that. And then what did I do? I got on the phone to a man that I had the impression I'd stolen his lover, Al, from 8 years earlier, to apologize to him in the middle of, you know, being blottoed. Well, whether or not I knew it, this man was an AA, and down in Atlanta where he was, and I was in upstate New York, he said, do you want help? And instead of saying, fuck you, I cried and said yes, and he got help all the way from Atlanta to upstate New York, got two people from the AA clubhouse to come get me. The meeting for the night had ended, and this is how people in 12-step programs handle situations and help people. They brought me to the AA clubhouse where people had stayed after the meeting, perhaps a dozen of them, to pour coffee into this wide awake drunk and talk about alcoholism and talk about recovery, more importantly. And I don't remember a single thing they said because I was drunk as a skunk. But what happened was that they gave me an AA schedule, and I woke up with a terrific hangover the next morning, called in sick to work, and went to my first AA meeting at 7 in the morning. And when they asked if there was anybody new, I brazenly raised my hand and said, yes, my name's David. I'm a gay alcoholic who's estranged from his partner. I'm a divorced man, and I basically spewed out my history in a nutshell. And it was suggested to me that I put the cotton in my mouth and listen. So that was my introduction to AA and 12-step recovery, and I didn't feel nervous at all, but I didn't have any idea what I was getting into. So did you have any idea what you were getting into?
Well, yes and no. The psychologist I was going to, I was living in L.A. at the time, said, you need to go to a meeting. Actually need to go to two meetings before I see you next week. And he gave me a list of meetings in the South Bay area. And he told me what to expect. And I fortunately hooked up with a group that became my home group, and really a bunch of great people, good meetings, good content. And so I was fortunate that I found a really good community start my recovery in David. I hope everyone would have that kind of experience, and it is uneven, unfortunately, in some areas, as you know.
Yeah.
Even though the same, it'll work out of the same book, it's the same steps, it's not always the same in every meeting.
No, it's not. And wouldn't you say it's important to find a meeting that you resonate with, one where you do feel comfortable and affirmed, and where the things that people are saying make sense to you?
Yes, absolutely. I think that you owe it to yourself to try, you know, number of, three or four of the local meetings, and so you get a flavor for the attendees. There may be a speaker meeting, there may be a meeting where everyone shares, there may be a meeting where you're working the steps, and all of them are different, and all of them are important. But you know, you find that the synergy in a room is different for each meeting. And so you'll find one that fits your own personality and how, where you feel easy. And, I, you know, that's usually where you'll end up going.
Right. Well, I certainly have found some toxic meetings in my past, meetings where people didn't have a lot of recovery or quality recovery, as I now have come to understand it. And somewhat abusive, actually, giving messages to people that were not kind and loving. And, you know, I don't know about you. Well, yes, I do. I have come to embrace a new version of my higher power, who I happen to call God, when I came into recovery. I've turned God from that of a fearful, judgmental God into that of a loving God. And so I look for that quality from people in meetings that I attend. And if I don't find that, I run. I don't walk. I just leave the meeting because I have been to, for instance, an NA meeting where there was a lot of anger and toxicity. And I don't know if you've ever had that experience.
I have in different places. I was traveling nationally a lot, as you probably remember, and I've been to meetings in probably 26, 28 different states. And there were some meetings that, because I was going to California back a lot, I had a home meeting there as well. But you're right. I walked into some meetings where the tension was so thick you could cut it with a knife, and the it was just not a place of welcome. But I think that's the exception, David. I think most places are eager to see either a newcomer or someone that's not normally at that meeting.
Oh, I totally agree, and I didn't mean to harp on a negative. I was just suggesting that people shop around and find a good fit for themselves. I think it's probably less than 1% of the meetings I've been to that have been the type of meeting I just described. But to refine it a bit more, I certainly have found some meetings that I've resonated with more, have found what I would call better quality sobriety, or at least people who are raising my consciousness to a new level. Because, you know, different people have different levels of sobriety, meaning recovery from addiction, from co-addiction, from lack of self-worth, if you will, which is what drives addiction. And so, you know, that's what I was talking about.
Yeah, I agree. And not everyone can be articulate as the next person.
Right.
They
right.
may not be able to say in a nice way things that you need to hear. And sometimes, but by the same token, sometimes an addict may need something right between the eyes.
That,
you know, they may see that. They may have to have their reality smack them right in the face.
I hear you. And, you know, Different Strokes for Different Folks, as this show is named, some people need to receive the message in a way that will really wake them up. Now, I tend to be a very sensitive person. I'm an empath. And I come from a background that included some abuse. I had a wonderful family life, but there was trauma in my background. So I'm very sensitive to anything that feels abusive. And so if the message is not loving, I freak out in a sense. And I've once heard it said, it's the tone that makes the music. I mean, it's just like actions speak louder than words. A message may sound loving, but if it's not delivered in a loving tone, then I'm not going to hear the message.
Right.
So,
interestingly enough, I'm a moderator, administrator of an addiction group on Facebook. And there was a woman on there who is a co-addict who was attempting to control her partner, her husband's recovery, checking on him daily, et cetera. How come he didn't go to a meeting? Where's your homework? I want to see it.
Yeah.
And, you know, she wanted feedback, and I happened to, I didn't necessarily hit her between the eyes, but I said, look, you got to realize you're not his sponsor. You know, he's not necessarily responsible to you in that way. You need to back off because you're the co-addict. But take care of yourself.
Right.
And well, most co-addicts don't know that.
No, they don't. And quite often they're as sick or sicker than the addict. Now, I had a sponsor, dear man, who once told me, and this hit me between the eyes, I didn't exactly know what he meant because it seemed to be a slightly different message than I was getting in recovery, but it planted a seed. And he said, the number one goal of recovery is to take care of yourself. And I've since heard other people say it's all about balance, body, mind, and spirit. And you taught me that when we were doing some step work together, the triangle that's on the AA book. It's all about balance. For the caller that just called in, I want to let you know that our child abuse survivor, an abuse expert that was supposed to be on, did not appear tonight. And what we're doing is I'm having a discussion with somebody else in 12-step recovery, such as myself, about the virtues of 12-step recovery and how amazing it can be to transform people's lives. So I hope you'll stay on the line, and if you have any input and stay on the line, I will come to you later. So, Wayne, I lost the thread there. Can you pick it up?
Sure. We were talking about co-addicts, and sometimes they're just as sick as the addict, but in a different way. You know, they're nurturing people. They've stuck with the addict through thick and thin, but they want to cure the addict, and they don't get that they're part of the problem. They don't get that they need to back off, let the addict find his own way with help through the therapist, through the 12 steps, through a sponsor, and they need to go to an Al-Anon meeting, a COSA meeting, CODA meeting, you know, something that deals with codependency.
Yes.
And Tia Melody wrote a great book on codependency, by the way, which I heartily recommend.
Oh, yes.
So that would be a first step as well for them, would be to read something like that.
Well, I've heard it said that at the root of every addiction is codependency. And that makes...
Yep, I've heard that too.
Yeah, doesn't that make sense? And why do you think that is?
Because as addicts, we're trying to control our environment. So if we can control the other person, then mission accomplished.
Yeah. Well, I certainly have been in codependent relationships, and at points they've been toxic. But the first two relationships I had, I didn't see it. I was married to a woman, and I spent 24 years with a man, and God bless him. He was a wonderful man. But he was a psychologist by training. And what I didn't realize was that he was playing psychologist with me. And I perceived myself to be the sick one. And he didn't realize he had stuff to work on until much later. And so I was the flawed one. I was the bad guy. That's how I perceived it to be. And the truth is, there's no good guy or bad guy. We're just human beings trying to get by and do the best that we can with what we have. And as my first sponsor in AA said to me, he gave me this affirmation, and that is, I'm doing the best I can with what I know about myself here and now. And I think as a part of coming to terms with recovery and making amends to people, that we need to practice a lot of forgiveness also, not just of self, but of others, and recognize that everybody, even abusive parents, did the best that they could with what they knew about themselves, because the so-called sins of the fathers are passed down to the sons and daughters. Oh.
And, you know, I heard Patrick Carnes, who is an addiction specialist, talk about addiction goes three generations out, so that if you take steps today to cure your addiction, then your great-grandchildren will start to feel the loosening of those bonds of addictions. But your own sons and daughters and grandchildren will probably be involved.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing because I had a grandfather who was a closet alcoholic, and I was looking for alcoholism in my family, and I didn't see it anywhere until one day I got together with Grandpa, and he was shit-faced. And even though I went into a blackout, I later realized some of the things he said. For instance, he later said to my mother that I was his father confessor. And he said to me, what I remember he said to me was, "I'm surprised your grandmother ever stuck with me." And I took that to family members and told them about it. Well, that was a seeming mistake because they said, "Not Grandpa, he's a saint." But the truth is that Grandpa was an alcoholic, and he may have been a sex addict, both those addictions I possessed. And so that's where it was two generations back in my family.
Well, you know, David, let me ask you a question about the 12-step program, because for those listening, what would their expectations be on a timeline? Is there a, you know, I know many people have walked into a room, they want to go to a couple of meetings, be cured, or have the cure, they got the book, they read the book, and be done with it.
Yeah.
And I know you've had sponsees like that, so, you know, what would you tell the audience about being cured?
This is a setup, Wayne. Well, first of all, what I'd say is the timeline is different for everybody.
Yep, I agree.
I don't really believe there's such a thing as addiction. I believe it's a symptom of an inner distress, and I believe that people can actually heal from any addiction. For instance, I drank alcoholically. I used to call myself an alcoholic at the beginning of every meeting, and today I can safely drink. So I say, for lack of a better term, I'm a recovered alcoholic. Now, as far as sexual addiction goes, I still get triggered. So I've still got an issue there, but I'm not acting out, meaning I'm not doing inappropriate things. So the addiction is in remission, if you will. But trust me, I will be cured of that dis-ease too, because I believe it's dis-ease within self. However, what I would like to say is that you get out of it what you put into it. And if you just go to meetings and you don't work the steps, if you don't pick up the telephone and call people and reach out for help, which is a sign of strength and courage, not weakness, as I have perceived it to be, you're going to stay stuck. And I went through the 12 steps in AA in 3 months and had a spiritual awakening, and other people in the program thought I was crazy, but I was attending 4 meetings a day and working the steps. And I had an epiphany. And I was judged, and I took that judgment on, and let's just say it made me crazy. So that's a long-winded answer to your question. What comments would you have?
Well, let me just say that many beginning addicts, if you will, who are steered into a program or wander in that door are probably not in a zen-like state like you. So they are going to have a little bit of time to first of all, detox and start to feel their feelings. Most people who have been drinking or sexing or doing drugs have been doing so because they don't want to feel the feelings that they're feeling, that they are numbed out.
Right.
So now that they're not going to have that cocaine, that alcohol, that sex, whatever that is, they've got to start feeling the feelings. Well, that takes a while.
Yes, it does.
To do that.
Yeah.
And part of it has to do with the neurochemistry of the brain, as well as the plasticity of the brain, David. You and I talked about some of the psychology meetings. I happen to be going one in a couple of days. And one of the presenters is talking about neurochemistry, neurobiology. And, you know, dopamine is the main feel-good drug that the brain produces. And when you start feeding it cocaine in particular or alcohol, the receptors get starved after a while and need more dopamine. so that you become numbed out in a physiological sense. So once you stop doing what you're doing to get high, taking care of your feelings, it takes a while for those receptors to go back to a more original state.
Mm-hmm.
They may never go back to the way you were when you were, you know, a teenager, but
yeah.
they need to detox.
Right. Well, I heard it said in a sexual recovery workshop that what happens is because of the chemistry of the brain, there is a groove, for lack of a better term, there's a groove that's established in the brain that makes it so easy for the metaphorical needle on the record to stay stuck. And that's why people quite often relapse. And it's important that people get back on the horse and keep trying, because relapse is a very real thing, especially with sexual addiction, which is not just putting a substance down. Sex can and is a very wonderful part of somebody's life if they can come to find it serves as a nurturing experience whereby it's not motivated by things like lust and where it fosters intimacy. But the point I was trying to make, and I've lost it here, Wayne, I guess maybe I'll ask you to comment.
Well, you talked about getting a groove and of those neurotransmitters, and that's correct, because as it was explained to me, the neural pathways from the brain,
yes,
going out, need to be literally retrained. It's not the response you're going to get anymore. You're going to have to go into a sober state, and it does take a while to start feeling your feelings. I mean,
okay,
we've heard people in meetings, David, you and I talk about, gee, you know, I'm starting to feel grief, or I'm starting to feel shame or guilt, happiness, instead of that gray zone that most addicts are in.
Well, now I've picked up the thread. Thank you.
Yep.
I was going to get to the point of feelings. We live in a vibrational universe, and most of us, I would hope, would think, would want to live a positive life filled with positive feelings. Yet the human experience includes feelings like sadness, anger, grief, despair, frustration, anxiety, which is really a physiological response that manifests in many different ways. But those things that I just mentioned don't feel good. And those are the things that most addicts seek to medicate. And so once they stop medicating those things, those feelings can come up, and that may cause relapse. But if they're able to sit with the feelings, experience them, and let them go, and reach for the next best thought, action, or feeling, then they can head in a positive direction. And this is what I call detachment, because if you honor your feelings and experience them, but don't dwell on them, don't take a negative path, but simply choose, and it usually takes an action, folks, because feelings can be overwhelming. But if you take an action, for instance, picking up the phone to talk about your feelings, or taking a walk, being in nature, doing anything that will get you outside of yourself, calling up a friend and asking them how they're doing, and maybe they're in a worse place than you, and you can help them out. Anything to get you out of yourself can make you feel better. And it's not that particular action per se, because as you get further along the path of recovery, you realize that is your state of wholeness, that's your state of being, and it comes from within, not without. And so, you know, what I'm trying to say is that if you free yourself up to the experience of being human, you can seek wholeness, you can find a positive life for yourself, and you can heal.
Yeah, David, the other thing I wanted to mention is that most addicts are going to have trouble identifying a feeling unless, you know, unfortunately you were going through, a divorce or a death or a loss of job, the three big things that can really affect your life.
Right.
You're going to feel grief about that. But those nuances, you know, you think of the rainbow, of all the different colors of the rainbow, we have that same ability within us to feel a whole rainbow of feelings.
Oh, yes.
And so my therapist at one point said to me, you need to identify the feeling, if you can, work on it, feel it, wash it, let it wash over you.
Right.
And then let it dissipate.
Yes.
If you fight it, then you're going to have a problem. You need to feel the feeling and then say, I felt that because, or it's not, you know, that's a PTSD reaction, or it's like something that's good happening to me. There's a lot of things you can identify, David.
Oh, yes. And let's talk a little bit about that fighting or resistance and what that does, because what I have seen it do is take me back into the struggle, where once I'm struggling, I'm lost once again, and I fall into the addiction. If I can view it as a challenge, however, I can overcome it. I can find that strength from within or from God or whatever source I identify as my strength.
Yeah, but it is the daily struggles that the addict usually has problems with. It is.
Oh, yeah, I'm not denying that.
Right, right. It is as the old AA term, living life on life's terms.
Yes, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Catching the red light, you know, having someone get mad at you in the checkout line, those kinds of things. You know, the other thing that I learned in a recovery setting was that you start your day off and you have 100 emotional dollars to spend all day.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're driving to work on the freeway or the interstate, and someone flips you off, cuts you off, is rude to you, and all of a sudden you have this automatic response, most of us would, that, gee, you know, what a bonehead, you know, that you did that to me.
Right.
And you get angry, and maybe you do something really dumb, and now you've spent, you know, 50 of those $100, and now you're almost bankrupt for the whole day emotionally.
Right. Well, let's talk a little bit about the idea of getting mad, either that person in the checkout getting mad at you or you getting mad at the driver that flips you off. Don't you think that you're giving your power away when you do that? Because it's just a feeling. Other things can't get us mad. They may provoke or trigger a feeling. But if we're going to get honest with ourselves, that feeling comes from within, and it's usually triggered by something from our past.
Oh, I agree. And it's, you know, I was in a checkout line today, and they weren't very efficient. And I got up to the counter, and the lady said, you know, you are extremely patient. I'm very sorry you had to wait.
Yeah.
But I was in a good spot. I said, yeah, it's not a problem. You know, I'm okay. And I was enjoying the sights of this particular place I was in because it was a local fruit stand that had flowers and stuff, a nursery kind of place. So it was with all the amazing colors of fall, the pumpkins, the flowers, et cetera, it was just filling my mind with things I wanted to take pictures of, for instance.
Beautiful. Well, you're a photographer, and that's what we call outer circle behavior, meaning it's something from that we can do that actually generates those feelings of well-being from within. And when we are in our addiction, we tend to let those things drop away. So we need to find things to replace that and reclaim our power, reclaim our joy. And that can come from activity, or it can come from things like meditation and prayer, whatever works. Different strokes for different folks.
I agree. And for me, being in business for so long, I was working off one side of the brain, the practical side. And then when I got involved in the recovery side and photography, it took me into the other side of my brain that really wasn't tapping into, the creativity.
Right.
And that's really helped me a lot to be able to do that in my recovery.
Don't you think that comes back to balance of mind? I mean, we live in a world where we have to be practical and we have to use the left side of the brain. But if we're staying in that analytical, which can be a BS, bullshit, part of our brain, we're not embracing all of our mind potential, and we're missing out on that which can fill our spirits up, that which can nourish us in ways that we may never have dreamed of.
Oh, I agree 100%. That, you know, I was so focused on and being driven by money and success and some and a lot of the wrong things. There's nothing wrong with being a success, but you need to be able to stop and smell the roses, as the old saying goes. And I didn't do that enough. You know, I have thoughts that, gee, I would like to, as any normal person would, that, gee, I miss my daughter's a flute concert or whatever that might be, you know, and you just have to move on and say, you know, that was then and this is now. And now I can pay attention to my kids and be the father that they want me to be.
Well, we've touched on experience. We've touched on things that have brought us to a better place. We've touched on strength. Let's talk some more, and we will go to the call lines in just a moment, so hang in there, area code 702. If you'd like to participate, we'd love to have you on the air to discuss this. You know, addiction or attachment to outer conditions is something that affects us all. It's part of the human experience. But let's talk some more about the rewards of recovering from whatever distress we're trying to self-medicate through outer external means.
Well, David, the big thing about rewards is to have that self-respect to live the kind of life that I deserve to live and have those kinds of things surround me that are more natural and not harming me.
Mm. Well, I like that. But again, I guess I was trying to lead the discussion into what we've talked about, what things were like. What I'm hoping to do is provide hope for what things can be like, how amazing they can be. There are promises in 12-step programs that talk about experiencing a life beyond your wildest dreams. And a lot of that comes from developing intuition, exercising good judgment, developing discernment, letting go of whatever distresses you, letting go of attachment to external conditions or addictions, and just being the person, getting to know who you are, be true to yourself, and be the person that you meant to be, were always meant to be, and for whatever reason had not been able to experience that, as many people are never able to do for whatever reason, because they don't follow their joy, they don't follow their bliss, as Joseph Campbell would say.
Yeah, and you're right. It is the promises of the 12 steps that are important, because they lead us into those things that are of a higher Zen nature, if you will, that it's hard to imagine when we're struggling. As we mentioned earlier, it's hard to imagine when we first get into those rooms that we can find happiness in sobriety. And it's that, as someone said to me, we send out that addict, whether it's the coke addict, the alcoholic, sex addict, we send out the addict as a firefighter, because as a younger person, that addict has always been able to manage our emotions in one way or another to make us feel better. Mm. And not in an appropriate way, but that firefighter, now all of a sudden, I know that firefighter is always going to be there, and I wish that firefighter for helping me when I was younger, but I don't necessarily need them anymore.
Right. Well, that's a good point, because at one point, addiction was our seeming friend, because it helped us cope. It helped us cope with whatever was distressing us. And I think it's important to embrace in recovery every aspect of our life, those seeming negatives, those dark nights of the soul, whatever have brought us to our today, because they're all blessings in disguise as I see it. And until we can let go of judging any aspect of ourselves or our past, we're not truly free.
Yeah, no, I agree. We are our own worst critics, and that's the hardest thing you'll ever do is forgive yourself to move forward in life.
Yeah. Well, tell you what. Let's see if area code 702 has any input. And they've hung in there for 23 minutes, 24 minutes. And we'd love to have your input if you so desire. And if you don't, that's perfectly okay. Wayne and I can go back to discussing. And you're free to participate with us, so I'm coming to you now. Area code 702, what is your name?
Richard.
Hey, Richard, how are you tonight?
Pretty good.
That's great. Can you crank it up a notch to excellent?
Right now, just good.
That's good enough, isn't it? We
exactly.
are what we are, and it's good to tell it like it is. It's just that a lot of times I'll hear people say, I'm okay, when they're really great. And I think it's important to express to other people what the full potential is. So, you know, I need
right
to sometimes
I'm
just...
I'm pretty good.
Okay.
I know I'm pretty good.
That's great. That's great. I'm BSing. So is there anything that you'd like to say about the discussion we've had?
Actually, I found it very informative.
And how so?
I've learned a lot about myself and everybody else.
Great.
Because
now, where
I am,
are you calling?
I'm from Las Vegas, Nevada.
Aha. I believe I know you. That's wonderful.
Yes.
Yeah, I'll have to give you a call. So, yeah, I just returned from Las Vegas, Wayne, as you know, and Richard's a very nice man that I met out there. And I'm glad that you tuned into the show tonight, Richard.
Yes.
So,
and I've been listening.
What did you find informative?
I'm not quite fully certain about the 12-step program, but you do have to reach into yourself and realize your own addictions. Well, I smoke, I drink.
Right.
I gamble.
Do you consider that you're addicted to those things?
Cigarettes, alcohol, yes.
Okay.
But I don't do it in excess.
Okay. So perhaps you're relying on something to make yourself feel better, but perhaps it's not creating dysfunction. I don't know. Do you feel like your life could stand improving at any level?
Yes, it can.
And what would you like to see?
Plan.
Yeah. What would your dream for yourself be?
Right now, get rid of my... Well, right now I'm dealing with my mom's medical problems.
Okay. Well, that can be a challenge.
My major problem is I put everybody I know, my friends, family, I put them before myself.
Okay, well, maybe Wayne and I can help you out with that. That's called codependency. Have you ever heard that term before? Because I don't think you had tuned in when we were talking a little bit about that.
Yeah, I know all about codependency, but it's not codependency. I want everybody else's life to be better than mine.
You don't believe
if
that you deserve? Go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to help everybody.
Well,
that's very altruistic.
I mean, I believe we're in this life to serve each other and to help each other. And that creates feelings of well-being for me. I've heard it said it's more blessed to give than to receive. So where's the problem for you?
Well, I put everybody else's health, well-being, work, whatever, before my
Okay, so you don't have balance there.
Exactly. That's what I need.
Okay.
And I know it, but I prefer my mom
being
well, and I'll come over to her house every day and take care of her and leave my life and relationships and everything else behind.
Yeah. Well, you know, from what I know about your situation with your mother, I think that's a very loving act, and that certainly must generate some wonderful feelings for you. But I've also heard it said that you can't give away what you don't have, and if you're not taking care of yourself first, you're number one, that then you cannot truly serve others in a way of selflessness, and it depletes you at a certain level, where you're not fulfilling your own dreams, which you're entitled to. Now, maybe Wayne would have something to say about that.
Yeah, David, thank you. The most addicts have a very poor opinion of themselves, a very poor self-image, in that they don't deserve things in life. A very common thread. So I obviously don't know you, Richard, but I would say that part of the 12-step program is to let us see what value we can be of others. And as I said to start the program, you know, you need to share what you got. That's part of the recovery. The more you share, the better, the weller, the more healthy yourself will be. Were you going to say something?
Me or Richard?
Richard.
Oh, I was going to say, it's I don't know. I've gotten this far in life. I'm doing pretty good. But I always put everybody, and I mean my friends, my family, everybody, and everybody tells me the same thing. I have to start focusing on myself before I can help everybody else in the world, which is pretty much what I do.
Yeah, well, that can be a little bit of a sticky point, because you deserve all of those good things yourself. And
what would happen to your mom if you weren't around to take care of her?
I honestly don't know, and I don't want to find out.
Well,
she's
my point is that you need to take care of yourself. Right. You need to take care of yourself health-wise, mentally, physically, so that you are there for her, because she is depending on you.
She doesn't really depend on me. That's kind of my own thing. I hate to see her the way she is. She can take care of herself, but I feel like it's my responsibility to help her, since she's helped me for the past 40 years. So now
it's
time to give back to her. It's time to give back to her, even at the expense of me and my health and mental and everything else. She comes first.
Mm-hmm.
So do my friends,
Wayne?
My sister.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but that only goes so far. And then because you're not taking care of yourself, you're putting everyone first. That's a classic symptom of an addiction that you need to get into some kind of a program that where you are going to take care of yourself. And maybe that means one night a week you go to a 12-step meeting or some other meeting that allows you to take care of you.
You know, there are 12-step meetings that handle almost anything under the sun. And if it's cigarettes that are presenting a problem for you, there's Nicotine Anonymous. If you feel your drinking is a little bit out of control, there's Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's not to say that you need to identify yourself as an alcoholic, because you might not be one. But you could learn what it is that makes you drink more sometimes. You could learn how to get in touch with yourself and how to find fulfillment in your life through attending a 12-step meeting. And they're all over the place. I'm sure Las Vegas is just peppered with 12-step meetings of every which kind, including gambling.
Considering this is Sin City.
Yeah, right. Well, I don't know. Do you have any other questions for us, Richard, that we can help you with?
No. I'm good for now. I'm just enjoying listening to the conversation you guys are having.
Well, it's great to hear your voice. And, you know, I will touch base with you because it was very nice to meet you. And I'm sure that, you know, perhaps I could give you some suggestions down the line if you would like that. And so thank you for calling in, and feel free to keep listening. I'm going to mute your mic, and Wayne and I will continue the discussion.
Okay, I'll continue listening.
Okay, you hang in there now. And just remember, you are worthy, you deserve all the joy in the world, and it's up to you to make it happen. Only you can make it happen. And with that said, I'm going to say goodnight to you. And Wayne, what would you say about that?
I would say I wish the best for Richard, and I think that he should. You should call him, David. I think that there's some synergy going on there, and you're a good friend to have.
Well, I could be. That's for sure. I related to him and had talked about this business that I'm in that I believe he could be a success with. And whether or not he chooses to go that route, I think perhaps working on himself first would be the first step, because nothing can fulfill us, not even work, unless we're truly in touch with the core of our being and able to experience freedom from whatever we attach ourselves to, especially if it's other people. And that's a trap that many of us fall into, wouldn't you agree?
Yes, I do, because I'm making a lot less money than I used to, and I'm much happier because I'm not chasing that dollar. I'm in more of a balanced lifestyle, and it depends on how you define happiness. And the things that I wrote on a piece of paper a long time ago have come true for me, and it's I don't look at material things as much as I used to anymore.
Right.
So it's really a mindset, David, and it's getting into that thought process. But it's more than a thought process. It's a state of being, a state of wellness.
Yes.
That you need to be integrated, as you've already said, mind, body, and spirit, so that you are prepared for it.
Right. Well, I liked what you were saying about writing things down on a piece of paper, because I think it's really important to get real and be tangible with things. And a lot of times we're out of touch with what really means something to us, or we may have no idea what means something to us. And so I think it's important to take little steps for baby feet when we're out of touch with what brings us real joy. And one way to do that is to write down whatever in our past has created happiness within us, whatever our dreams might be, to lay it out and envision what might be a really joyful life for ourselves. I can't say that I did that exercise a long time ago. It would have brought me up to speed a lot faster. But I've had psychics and healers and seers on my show who have said, for example, if you're looking for a relationship, write down and be specific what qualities you're looking for in an ideal mate, and meditate on that and believe that you're worthy of that mate, and look at it every day and focus and have faith that that will come to pass for you. Because faith is so important in my life today, and as I've seen in others in 12-step programs or in faith-based traditions, that is the key, as I see it. What do you think?
Well, I agree, and it's interesting you talked about meditate on it. That resonated with me because when I was going through a really tough stretch, my higher power introduced me to Tai Chi.
Oh, yeah.
I found that to be extremely relaxing, and the individual who was a martial arts person who was teaching me became a friend, and it it really helped me focus on my inner person, that inner spirit. And it is a form of meditation, or something just like yoga is.
Sure.
There's also just true meditation, so that you know you can sit on a in the lotus position and thinking of nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I said that wrong. Because if you're thinking, then you're not really doing it. You know, but to have your mind go blank is pretty tough.
Yeah. Well, you know, today as I was flying back, and Richard might think that I got back last night like I was supposed to, but I ended up in Charlotte, North Carolina. And at first I was very sad because I wanted to be home. There were so many things I was looking forward to. But then I stopped and thought, David, stop feeling sorry for yourself. Everything happens for a reason. And there's some reason that you are in Charlotte, North Carolina. And by golly, I met several people that really were looking for a way to get some financial freedom. And I had a key that I could offer to them, and many of them have decided to accept that key. And so I was able to help these people. And not only did it help them, but it's helping me develop my business. So isn't that something?
It is something. I thought you were going to tell me you had one of those pilots that had some distress and you had to land in Charlotte.
No, the airline fucked up. Sorry, folks, for my French. It fucked up. And that's another story, and we don't need to go there. But, you know, the point is that life is filled with all kinds of amazing things. And on the subject of meditation, I did a lot of that on the way home today because I was nicotine-deprived, and I didn't want to go into a nicotine fit. So I meditated, and I meditated on a lot of things that brought me to a higher level of consciousness and released me from concerns of the body, because I am addicted to nicotine at this point. There's no question about it.
Mm.
Yeah.
I heard a lecture last night at a photography club about someone who had taken their profession, photography, to a higher level, that had rescuing elephants and wildlife and chimpanzees, and the photography and women in India that are of the caste system that are the undesirables, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the work that this person is doing just really uplifted my spirit last night. She put a picture up of an elephant that's actually been in National Geographic. It was just a great picture.
Hmm.
And the whole audience just went, oh, my God, look at that picture. And it was one of those ones that it's an award winner, you know. It's unbelievable.
Hmm.
But it took me to a higher place about how can I apply myself and my skills to maybe a nonprofit, a charity that needs help. And so I'm still thinking that through.
Wonderful. Well, you know, we're almost at the end of the hour. And I just wanted to say, for any listeners that would like to communicate with me tonight, I will be on Facebook. And you can find me at David Cowdery, Cowdery. I don't mind revealing my true identity, although I just broke my anonymity in 12-step programs. So there. Wayne, thank you for joining me tonight. And if you have a few moments, stay on the line and we can catch up. And Richard, it's been a joy to talk to you. And if you want to join me on Facebook, I'll be on Facebook later this evening and would be happy to carry on a discussion with you. Wayne, what's going to happen is I'm going to detach from the radio show after closing, and we can talk for a few minutes if you have time.
I do.
Great. Okay, so once again, we come to a close. Now we can pause upon the idea that we are all united through the diverse tapestry of our individual gifts. There's no real thing as separation except in our own minds. We are each unique expressions of the ultimate source of our beings. We are spiritual beings having a human experience who can and will have a spiritual experience if we allow it to be. Now remember, I'm on the air four nights a week, Sunday, Monday, Thursday, Friday, at 7:30 Eastern Time, and my shows are also archived on freespiritbroadcasting.com in addition to Blog Talk Radio. So have a great week, and remember, whatever you dream, you can realize.
You have been listening to Different Strokes for Different Folks. To find common ground and take it to the next level, here on Blog Talk Radio with David Clark, every Friday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. You can listen to this broadcast again on srbroadcasting.com.